When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast for another week. My name is Matt Walsh, joined by Jake Michaels as always, and Champion Data's Christian Jolly to talk all things footy for another week. Jake, opening rounds in the books. I don't know about you, but my tipping did not go well.
What'd you get? Tell us.
Big fat naught out of four, unfortunately.
Well, I was going to say...
I explained my logic and it makes a lot of sense, but the zero out of four looks really bad.
It does look bad, especially when you are considered an expert tipster. Very disappointing. Any feedback?
Didn't put... Yeah, my dad, actually.
Why do you follow your tips?
Yeah.
Gee, you won't be doing
Send me a message. You said, I followed the expert tipster. I said, geez, expert's not a word I'd use, but...
Be using the, it doesn't count, it's not round one yet, so it's pre-season.
I was hoping it might be a bit of a mulligan, a bit of a just try your luck and see how you go, and round one counts, but we were talking to the guys that run Footy Tips upstairs, and opening round definitely counts.
Definitely counts.
Unfortunately.
Yep.
Heaps to get to today, as per usual, but before we get into it, Jake, something you noticed from the weekend of footy?
Well, there was a lot of things, and I'm making an effort this year, because you always come to me, and I always think, God, I don't know. I notice things and I never write them down. So I'm making an effort to write things down that I see this year. I was up in Queensland for the two games up there at the Gabba, and then on the Gold Coast as well the following day. And it was there at People First Stadium.
Correct.
So that stadium's changing name every season, it seems. But it's ironic, that name, People First Stadium. It was 30 degrees and they were not putting the people first. So I was in a queue to get into the venue with hundreds of other punters, and security at the front of the lines were making everyone pour out their water bottles. Like, tip their water out. They wouldn't let you bring in a water bottle.
You could drink it if you wanted to.
You could drink it, but everyone's just standing there tipping their water out and walking in with an empty bottle, and there's nowhere to fill up your water bottle inside, and it's 30 plus degrees outside. Not good enough.
Whack.
Isn't
that's that? No, I agree. That's
I've never had that at any footy
ground. Are we sure there was nowhere to fill it up? Well, the toilet, I guess.
I'm sure there was somewhere to get water inside the stadium, but from my brief look, I didn't find anywhere.
It's straight to the media rooms.
Don't you think that's a bit poor?
That is poor. Yeah,
it's as hot as it will be for a footy game. Gold Coast at that time of the year. It's an afternoon game. I thought that was a bit poor.
Bottles of water are still
fine.
I've
never seen that at a stadium for footy before. I've seen it at other events where they make you pour things out, but not at the footy.
The term please explain has been used a little bit already this season. Maybe we need to send a please explain to People First Stadium. Say that quickly five times.
Put the people first. I mean, they're already making the difficult trek out to the venue. Can't take the train out there. So, just allow the water.
Fair enough. Christian, something from the weekend you noticed.
Yeah, so we spoke about it, I think it was 2 years ago now, we looked at 20 comebacks from 20-point deficits, 30-point deficits, and 40-point deficits within the game.
Did a deep dive on that, I remember.
Yeah, so I think it was 2022 that we last looked at it. We had one again, obviously, on the weekend, on Friday night, a 46 comeback by a certain team in Navy Blue, which I'm sure we'll get to later, but... I sort of just wanted to look at, have the numbers gone up or down in recent years of 30-point comebacks. They haven't changed too much. We had eight 30-point comebacks last year, one 40-point comeback, which we've already sort of matched this year. Especially with 30-point comebacks, if you go back from 2023 and keep going backwards, there's been eight comebacks, nine comebacks, eight comebacks, six comebacks, eight comebacks. So very, very similar, about a 6% win rate that if you do fall behind by 30 points, you come back and win. But what I've done is I've taken it one step further and just looked at your record the next week. So after having a come
you're
back
riding
from
the
30
emotional
points.
High. You're thinking, how good are we? We've been able to come back from six goals down, whatever it might be.
Yep. And how much does it, you know, again, can you read into it and say, does it take a lot out of you to come back from 30 points? Or is it sort of more uplifting for the next week? And sort of found that, yeah, in recent times, especially last year's probably the one that caught my eye. As I said, 8 comebacks last year from 30 points down, 0 wins from those 8 teams. So not one team was able to back up the very next week.
Footy psyche is funny, isn't it? So well, get on the Tigers is what you're saying.
I think so. That's what these numbers sort of say. So again, the previous year we had 9 30-point comebacks and it was a 5-4 record that year. But looking back the past 5 years, it's a 30% win record.
Pretty ordinary.
Backing up from coming back from 30 points. The team that's actually given up the 30-point lead in that same time has a 42% winning record. So Brisbane are playing Fremantle over there. Mm-hmm. Again, not over 50% win rate, but they've got probably slightly more chance of winning the numbers, say, than Carlton do.
There you go. Very interesting. One to keep an eye on this week for round one.
It's a good one.
Something I noticed. So you mentioned that you were up in Queensland this week for the opening round, went to both games. And I did notice that you were on the screen in the background of the Fox Footy broadcast after Carlton's win, interviewing George Hewitt. Did he give you much?
A little bit.
Okay.
Little bit.
So this is the thing that I noticed. So for those,
I'm not sure where you're going with this.
For those listening or watching on YouTube at home, this is the first year where there have been some new media access rules brought in. So it stipulates that all players are to be made available for 20 minutes post-match. Basically, you can have your pick of whoever's available and have a chat to them for 20 minutes.
Yep.
And that's an AFL-stipulated rule. You were at two games. How do you think the clubs are going in the early part of the season with those rules?
You're grinning at me, so I'm not sure what's
around
the corner here.
No, I'm genuinely interested.
I think the clubs are, by and large, pretty good with this.
Better than last year? I mean, you've got a bit of a sample size.
I don't necessarily think they were poor in the past, but someone like George Hewitt with the incident with Lachie Neale, they probably wouldn't have wanted you to speak to him in previous years.
Okay.
Now there's, it's not to say it was a hard and fast rule that you couldn't, but now all the players have to be made available.
Did
now,
you find that was the case? They were
Not as in they're all in a circle waiting for you to come and interview them, but if you say, I want to speak to George Hewitt or Patrick Cripps or Harry Mackay.
Yep.
Within reason, because you know there are at the bigger games, there are a lot more media there. They can't have they can't have one player going to everyone one by one. It's going to take too long.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, they can't turn around and say no, you can't speak to this player now, which I think is really good. It's good for access. It's good for the fans as well. Mm-hmm. You know, hearing from different players and some players even take Dusty Martin for example, one of the greatest players of the modern era. It's someone who wouldn't really talk and wouldn't do much media. And I think now you might find that you can have a little bit more access to these.
A few good conspiracy theories going around in the media at the moment. One surrounding Kate Middleton and her disappearance from public life and some photoshopped images and all that. You're looking at me with a look on your face.
No, I saw this, but I didn't know what that... I saw this photo.
But did you see the conspiracy theory that Dusty was just left out of this week's lineup because he didn't want to answer questions about Dimmer? I thought it was very funny. But yes, will be very interesting to see how players that might not normally be as media keen. You kind of think back, like Buddy was never a big media guy either.
Yep.
He's missed the boat there, so he might be counting himself lucky. But I think broadly for those listening on that aren't in the media,
access is good.
And the media is not malicious, and everyone kind of drags on the media a lot. The media says this, the media says that. I think when you're talking to players post game, it is always the most friendly. Everyone's quite happy to chat to you,
especially when they
talk footy, especially when they win. and more access can only be a good thing for fans. And we look forward to seeing how this goes throughout the year.
Absolutely.
Things to get into. Let's get into the main body of the pod. Opening round. Firstly, Christian. I mean, as a statistician, yay or nay? How does it work in your system?
You must hate having that
opening round.
Okay, yeah. Pre-round, during the round, love it, whatever, footy's on, give me footy anytime. Getting all these media queries and trying to analyse it with only 8 teams playing after 1 week, it is quite annoying. These, we've only got a 4-day break until the real round one starts. As I said last week, I'm all for just playing footy, whatever, right? Again, some of the US sports, they don't really follow round structures. They just, you just play when you're scheduled to play. Yeah. So I'm okay with it being like that. But yeah, it is a little bit annoying trying to get your head around some of the numbers and going, well, missing 10 teams worth of data here. So yeah, it is better for an analytical point of view to have all teams play, on that first week to get the season away. But I enjoyed it. And I think it was a success from, crowds and exposure from what I can tell.
Thinking of another product we show on the channel on ESPN, so the NBL, oftentimes you find that clubs will play two games in a round, and then other weeks they'll play one game in the round. Yeah. So it can, I mean, as long as it evens out.
They're very, I was going to say, a bit precious in AFL from all this talk that we've had about round zero. It's like, not, you know, even EPL and English football, you might have to play a midweek round if you're playing different competitions.
I think the difference is because we are such a weekend-based league, we you know, we say the weekend now extends kind of a Thursday, but that is the block. We don't play games on Tuesdays outside of Anzac Day or something like that.
As someone who went to Queensland, did you feel the vibes were a little bit different to other times you've been up in Brisbane or the Gold Coast footy?
No.
Okay. So there's work to do maybe for fostering a bit more interest in the league up
there? I think so, but I don't think anyone expected, you know, Queensland and New South Wales have opening round, it's just going to be an absolute festival of footy and it's going to be unbelievable.
Crowds were good?
The crowds were good, but I didn't necessarily walk away thinking, gee, footy's really going places in Queensland. I think the two team, you know, despite Brisbane's second half, I think Brisbane's still one of the best teams in the comp. And I think Gold Coast have every chance of playing finals this year for the first time in the club's existence. So I think footy's in a pretty good spot in Queensland. And then you look at New South Wales. Same can be said. GWS is now everyone's flagship all of a sudden. And Sydney looked as good as anybody defeating Melbourne. So the football point of view is really strong, and you only have to go back a few years to when you were thinking, gee, it's really ordinary.
I think our first five episodes of the podcast, I think all we were talking about was the death of Queensland footy and things like that. It was dire.
Exactly. So I think that they all get checks, but of course, it's going to take time. It's going to take time for the fans to really get on board these teams and the crowds to fill out. Will the crowds still be there mid-year if a team starts struggling? So, you know, when the weather gets poorer.
Yeah. No, well, my thought is, you know, you have the Giants hosting two matches in a row, so opening round and round one.
Yep.
Playing Collingwood, a lot of fanfare, a lot of people coming up, rematch of the prelim. This week you've got North.
You're going to get that against North.
So, you know, we talk about 20,000, what a successful crowd it was, how many people were there. I'm very interested to see what happens at NG Stadium, another new stadium name for
us,
come Saturday.
Probably what I notice in Queensland, you know, the two travelling teams, Carlton and Richmond, two of the bigger fan bases in the sport, there were a lot of Carlton people and a lot of Richmond people at those two games. So to your point, if you've got North Melbourne going up, how many North fans are travelling?
Correct. Speaking of that game, the Carlton-Brisbane one, it was a fair game, wasn't it?
Can we put the Wii hat on for 5 seconds?
You know I hate the Wii hat.
It was pretty good. Did you give up?
Yeah, I'd consigned.
Turn it off?
Very much so. I think 10 minutes before that sort of that shift in play where Carlton started to find their hands a bit cleaner and forced a bit more pressure on Brisbane towards the back end of that second quarter, I was contemplating just sort of putting it on mute and going about the rest of my evening. But no, they were fantastic, the Blues coming back. I mean, you have to sort of raise a few questions about the Lions, and this was a hallmark of their last year, was their just inability to
remember that game against
put
Melbourne
teams away. The same thing. I think they were up in that game as well.
I think this was my takeaway and something I wanted to, I guess, pose to you both. Is does that result and the way that match played out say more about Carlton or Brisbane for the rest of this year?
Good question. I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well as sort of where you thought the game turned.
Because was it more that Carlton took a giant step in terms of what they were doing, or Brisbane fell off, to Matt's point, as we saw last year at various stages?
Yeah, it's probably, again, a bit of both. So the big thing for me was, and again, it's very simple to say, you watch that game and Carlton fall, you know, as I said, 46 points behind, 7 goals behind, and you just think, well, yeah, they're not clean, they're not winning the contest, they're not getting the hands to the ball, because Brisbane were dominating possession and doing quite easily. Carlton won the contested possessions in the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, and drew even in the fourth quarter. So they won the contest every single quarter.
But the contested ball is Carlton's...
Exactly, it is where it was coming out of. So it was what was happening out of that, out of those contests. So, and again, the numbers weren't huge, but plus 13 for uncontested possession in the first quarter for Brisbane. Yeah. Carlton was able to even that down to plus one in the second quarter, where the game sort of just stopped and it was pretty.
And that's where Brisbane's
at
their most dangerous, when they have space, time, and can hit up.
Very,
teams,
very
right?
low disposal team that just loves to pick the eyes and sort of just exactly find the open targets and go quick. So third quarter was a massive turnaround. Carlton were plus 29 for uncontested possession. So put Brisbane behind the eight ball. But again, it's very similar to the final last year in the prelim. The percentage of possessions that you're winning from a contest. So it was very open for Brisbane. The first quarter, they won 67% of their possessions uncontested. Second quarter, as I said, it got a bit equal there. 59.5% uncontested possession rate in Q2.
Is that sort of where we generally see around the average?
Yeah, about 56-57% is around the average.
Yeah,
46% in Q3.
So they were 10% below them.
And less than half of their possessions were coming uncontested. So Carlton really turned it into a contest game. And as I said, they were winning the contest in the first quarter. So they sort of saw that their strength would be okay. We want to try to maintain and keep possession of the ball, but we don't want to do that by spreading the field, because every time we turn it over, the field spread, and Brisbane just, they go so well off turnover, one of the best scoring teams from turnover. So Carlton, even though they sort of maintained possession, they still kicked it to within contest. They always had numbers, you know, around the ball when the ball landed. So it wasn't ever a sort of, if we lose it, we lose it to one player who goes sideways and Brisbane are now open. It's like, if we lose it, Brisbane are going to win it in a contest and they have to put it back into a contest against us. So again, you look at the first, you know, the start of the game to 20 minute mark of the second quarter, Brisbane had 49 marks, with 21 uncontested possessions up on Carlton and plus 20 inside 50s. So that's probably across the first 50 minutes of the game. Across the next 40 minutes, so from the 20 minute mark of the second quarter to the end of the third, Brisbane were kept to 24 marks, so half as many marks. The uncontested possession count flipped to, they were 36 below, rather than being 21 above, and the inside 50 count, as I said, they were plus 20, dropped to negative 5, and it's the simple pressure number from Carlton, 171 from the start of the game to halfway through that second quarter, up to 193 from that state, from, you know, as I said, 20-minute mark of the second quarter to the end of the third, the score was 8-5 to 1-6 Carlton's favour. So pressure went up, and they just made Brisbane play a little bit more contest. And again, to your point, maybe that was Brisbane weren't able to sort of get the game back on their terms.
Yep.
Once Carlton sort of got it to the way they wanted to play, Brisbane weren't able to reflip that and tried to go head-to-head.
Inaccuracy doesn't help as well. 1-6 in that time as well.
Exactly.
It's probably not the way you want to be, you know, when you do get your limited chances when a team is you know, to quote-unquote, has the momentum.
Yeah. I think Charlie Cameron missed two that he
Lincoln
would.
Lincoln McCarthy was a bit wayward compared to what we've been used to.
I think I'll answer my own question, seeing as you two won't, you're going to sit on the fence as per usual. I think it says more about Carlton. I know it's easy to say because they were the team that you remember that because they came back and won the game, but it wasn't just the game and it wasn't just the comeback. It was the team they were playing, the rematch, revenge match, whatever you want to call it, from the preliminary final, which is real. I don't care what people say. Yes, you don't get to play in a grand final next week, but you, of course you want to come back and beat the team that knocked you out last year when you were so close.
I don't believe in it, but when it's the last team you've played in the last venue you've played at, and you go up there to do it again, it must
have some effect, even if it's a couple of percent. And then you add in the fact that they were missing maybe the team's most important player in Jacob Wiedering and another top three or four or five in that category in Sam Walsh.
Jack Martin.
And there's a few others that you can add in as well. Losing Sam Doherty at halftime.
Yep.
So many things going against this club. And I will put the we hat on again. I think we can all agree as Carlton supporters, these are times and where we've just seen Carlton can't come through in these sort of situations.
Yeah. We were talking in the office about how it compares to other home and away wins.
Oh, it's right up there. In terms of home and away win, it's very hard to think of a better one in recent history.
Where we came at was 2013, so 11 years ago, final round against Port Adelaide over at Amy Stadium, a final game. Port fans and Carlton fans might remember this, getting a bit off topic. But like in terms of coming back, the metal, the belief shown by the group.
Yeah.
And of course, they end up winning a final that year as well. So maybe that's the natural comparison. But in terms of the last decade, it's probably the best home and away win they've been able to notch.
Yeah, and I mean, the last three, I would make the case that the last three wins Carlton has had are the three biggest wins of the last 10 years.
Any danger of a double digit or more win, though? What's going on?
Yeah, well, it's just seems to be 1 point, 2 point, 1 point. But to your point before, it doesn't look like they're going to win this week.
Well, yes. Quick word on a couple of things. So Doherty, obviously, so, you know, two bouts of cancer, now a third knee reconstruction. Just horrific news that you wouldn't wish upon your worst enemy, let alone a man who clearly has as much respect in the footy world as Sam Doherty. And the other is Kadeen Coleman, who, of course, looked rather innocuous at the time. And you thought, you know, jarred knee, or maybe he's just bruised his knee when he kicked out at the defender. But, of course, that was confirmed to be an ACL as well. And this is a guy who, towards the back end of the year, showed that he's going to be an absolute star of the competition.
Yeah, and he's very important to them as well.
Correct. And this is kind of, well, we've already talked about it, but when he went off, that ability to find these kicks and really damage teams with their low disposal but high efficiency count really dropped off. And I think he's going to be a really vital miss for the Lions this season.
It's a huge loss, and you wouldn't wish, as you say, you wouldn't wish any ACL injury on anybody. And there's no good time to do an ACL. You do it round one. It's you just not even round one. Yeah. You know, opening round. You're out the whole season, and it's heartbreaking. You got to feel for these guys.
The grudge match. Hey, I really enjoyed this one. New coaches. So obviously Adam Uze at Richmond and Hardwick against his old mob at the Suns. It's obviously a very small sample size when you're talking about one regular season game. But there were some interesting things to come out of this game, and we sort of wondered how Damien Hardwick would go. Had the burnout at Richmond, had a bit of time off.
Now he comes to the Suns
and has this 6-year deal, and you go, geez, is he biting off more than he can chew? Is he really the coach that we thought he was, or was the cattle that he had at Richmond that won all those premierships, is that sort of what carried them? And I think the biggest question I had coming into this match was, could Dimmer innovate? And, you know, very small sample size, as we say, but it seems like he is.
Yeah, exactly. I sort of said to you guys pre-pod, it's like he's got this shiny new toy to play with. He's the personnel he's got on the park is very different to what he had at Richmond. So, again, one game, very small sample size, as we said, and they weren't great in the preseason. So there wasn't much to take out against, you know, the one game we recorded in the preseason was against the Giants, where they were just completely smashed. But, yeah, from 1 week, it's sort of like, We saw Matt Rao finish with 20 clearances, which is the most, you know, we've covered since 1999. And
a maybe record.
A maybe record, yeah. They won the clearances across the game, plus 13, which was the best record for anyone. I looked at Richmond 2017 to 2021 when they were winning premierships, you know, basically just by waking up in the morning. They were 18th for clearance differential in that time. So they've never been a big clearance team. In that time, 10% of their overall score came from centre bounces, yeah. So it wasn't a big part of the game. 20% of their score, you know, one in five scores came from centre bounces against Richmond on the weekend. And even just, you know, the metres game by handful has always been Richmond's signature. Mm. So it's a one
from
thing
those
you,
premiership
it's
years.
The one thing you can look at. So, and it's the one thing that a lot of teams have brought in and copied. So we're seeing Essendon do it, Hawthorn do it, and a lot of other teams. Sort of copy Richmond's game style. So they were 149 handballs per game for 426 metres gained from those handballs.
The Tigers in those times.
In 2017 to 2021, which was just, you know, through the roof. Gold Coast had 124 handballs, so slightly fewer, 70 metres gained. So basically half a metre per handball compared to Hardwick's usual 4 metres per handball. So completely different way to move the ball, completely different way to set up because you are winning stoppages and you don't need to win a lot of sort of back half. So I think this is why, and again, yep, one game, but I'm a big watch on how good a coach is Damien Hardwick, because he is able to show that, okay, I was able to get the best out of what I had at Richmond and brought in a brand new game style with this high metres gate. Now we're going to see this, and again, Carlton are sort of doing it, and, you know, Champion Data looking at the numbers sort of said, Carlton have to get their turnover game to be a bit better. You can't just be a good clearance and contest team. I think Hardwick could unlock the key to go, okay,
the Suns have
the
balance.
We just win the clearances and contest, and we can get it out to some of these guys on the outside. Anderson, Sam Flanders is playing massive role. Mm-hmm. Alex Sexton from behind the ball, sort of just being there to be able to give the ball.
Speaking my language now.
It was a very impressive coaching performance in terms of he clearly got the best out of the team in a completely different way than he usually does.
It's so impressive. I mentioned this to Jared Barker on Red Time last week.
Tune in every Thursday, by the way, the fresh pod that we've got this season.
Didn't even mean to do that, but thank you very much. About Damien Hardwick and where he stands, and if, like you said, it's a tiny sample size. It's one game and we've had more than half teams not play yet. If he can lead the Suns to finals for the first time in club history, do you think we'll get to the... In 6 months' time, we'll sort of look back, sit back and say, is he the best coach in footy? And obviously, we're talking about Alistair Clarkson.
Are you talking all-time or modern era?
No, current coach. So yeah. Alistair Clarkson, a lot of people have him on this pedestal that no one can ever knock him down. Given his trajectory, off-field stuff and the way North, we imagine they're going to go this year, trending downward, and Hardwick trending up, does he sort of pass him? I don't think it's crazy to say.
Yeah, I think you're right. Small sample size, this is the caveat in all of this. And of course, they'll have bigger challenges. I think this week's matchup with Adelaide is fascinating.
So they
will be. It's a great question. I have tipped. Who have I tipped? Yeah, don't listen to me anyway.
Yeah, we don't want to know.
Yeah.
Is there. Slightly off topic, but is there how much of an advantage is there in playing a game first?
Yes. I was going to say
Chris Scott was big on this too. Saying,
so Adelaide are travelling to the Gold Coast. I'm almost giving Adelaide a first quarter pass. If Gold Coast come out and jump them, it's sort of like, well, yeah, Gold Coast have a week under their belt.
Yeah.
Adelaide might take a while. Again, I'd still probably tip Gold Coast, and I worry that Adelaide probably won't get the best performance. The one I really worry about is GWS North Melbourne.
Yeah.
GWS have just beaten the premiers, have got a week of football under their belt. They know what they're doing, and they're getting North, who, you know, as you said, maybe. And maybe I'm completely wrong, and Clarkson could be a genius and keep it. You know, I don't expect North to win, but they might keep it between 20 or 30 points. But I can just see this orange tsunami happening this weekend where a week of footy under the belt, we saw some of the skills in pre-season and even in this round zero, it does take a while for a team to sort of get...
You know those stats about coming back off the bye? Like, Cats were horrific for years, just the way that they came off the bye and always seemed to lose.
I mean, there'd be... You can look
when
at it, but this
pre-season,
is...
pre-season, I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is even bigger than a bye. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think this is even worse than a bye because you're coming in through a new season. And yes, we had a pre-season game, but I don't... Even if you ask the players, I don't think it feels like the same build-up and the same sort of...
Going back,
feel for it. So it's a brand new feeling for the season, and yeah.
Just going back to the Suns quickly.
Yes.
Suns, Tigers, both lists fully healthy because I know the Tigers missing some key players. Which list is better?
Right now,
I think it's clearly Gold Coast.
Yeah, not even. I don't think it's close. And I don't think that's disrespectful to Richmond. I think that's just at the stage of where their list is at. Right.
Yeah.
And the Suns are clearly building, and then the Tigers are clearly sort of still trying to, like, you know, not rebuild, but they're trying to. Reshape the list for a new coach, right? That wants to play a certain game style.
You look at Gold Coast, as I said, have yet to play finals, but you look at across the last 4 or 5 years and the individual talent is there. So they've had Charlie Ballard's been the best one-on-one defender across the season. Sam Collins has been the best interceptor across the season. Noah Anderson has been one of the best kick meters gained players across the season. Matt Rau, one of the best contested possessions players across the season. Looking at Will Powell in recent weeks, since around 18 last year, he's third in the comp for intercept possessions behind Tom Stewart and Sam Taylor, who are two all-out guns in defence.
The most impressive part is you say all these names and we don't even speak about Will Tuuk Powell, Miller.
Tuuk Miller, as I said, Tuuk Miller probably doesn't stand out as the number one in anything, but he's just one of the great two-way runners. And again, 2 years ago, I think he was one of the only players that had, can't remember the exact numbers, but 25 disposals, 5 scoring involvements and 5 tackles. He's one of those players that can hit you sort of both ways. So they've got all that individual talent that have actually been at the top of their game. They do have the best one-on-one defender, the best clearance. But a lot of that has been, as I said, the names I've just said, all midfield and defence. So I'm really, really looking at the forward line. You've seen Ben King kick 5, Jack Lukosius kick 3, and the one that probably didn't get a lot of credit is Malcolm Roses Jr.
Yeah.
5 marks inside 50, the equal most of anyone for the round, and just gave them that mid-sized target that everyone's crying out for. So
Suns, they go 2-0. Are you convinced?
I'm convinced now.
You're convinced now?
I am. I tell you what, I reckon the player they'd love to have, Isaac Rankin.
Yeah.
Get a good look at him this week.
Moving on. Giants Pies. Sneaky good rivalry all of a sudden. I know there was a bit of byplay in the off-season, the prelim last year, 1-point game. Mason Cox calling it a showground for livestock, then became a laughing stock for about 5-10 minutes. I don't mind the byplay.
He's been in the wars, Mason, the last...
I know he's sort of been exonerated by the vision that came out about that centre bounce warm-up stuff, but he did talk a big game pre-season and didn't quite pull off the game that many would have hoped for from him. I like this. The Giants social media team getting into the Pies. You know, as a small club, which the Giants are, you're never going to be able to, you know, match the heights of pure engagement these big clubs get. But when you can kind of poke a few needles here and there, you can drum up a bit of interest. Full house, 20,000 at Giants Stadium. I really enjoyed the pre-match like build-up as much as the actual match, and the Giants were incredibly impressive. I think the thing that stood out to me in the actual game was how they peppered Craig McRae's side. This is a side that doesn't really get scored on too heavily too often.
Yeah.
And their efficiency going inside 50 was as clean as I've almost seen from a team.
And they almost out Collingwood. So we spoke about Melbourne last year in that final had 30 more entries than Collingwood. And Collingwood also lost the entries against GWS the next week. So towards the back end of last year, that was one thing that Collingwood were struggling to do. They weren't having high inside 50s. They were sort of really reliant on turning the ball over in their back half and scoring from defensive half chain. So the first stat that stood out to me is the Giants actually scored 23 more points than the Magpies did from defensive half chains, which is the biggest differential against Collingwood since the start of last year. So no one outscores Collingwood from going from back half. And I think most people would have seen on air, there was the one tackle late inside forward 50 for the Giants for the night. So you usually think that means they're not working hard enough or trying to lock the ball in there, but that wasn't part of their plan. It was sort of, if we don't hit a target inside 50 and score, then roll back and make sure that Collingwood, who are the best end-to-end scoring teams can't do that against us. And as I said, they were able to give Collingwood more inside 50s, but which left them with more quality entry when they went forward up there. And so it's exactly what Collingwood did for the last 10 weeks of last season. You know, and we thought it's a bit risky to play that way. You never want to lose the territory count. But again, it was just so well done by the Giants that they were able to generate scores from the back half, but they also have a really clean forward 50 didn't allow that, you know, Darcy Moore and Quainer and all that just to block one hole. They really had to sort of, find their way around.
I'm all for the pump up and the hype surrounding the Giants. I think it's well deserved. Jared Barker, great work, does fantastic work, that man. He did these positional rankings of every unit in the league and then did all of them and then looked at the actual list in entirety and then ranked it based on those positions. And at the start of the season, you had the Giants number one. And I think when I first looked at it, I was a little skeptical. But then when you do go through each line, they tick so many boxes everywhere. They don't have many, if any, weaknesses on the ground. So
dynamic.
Very dynamic, very exciting. And I understand everyone getting excited about their prospects in 2024. With that said, I would urge everybody to just pump the brakes on the Collingwood premiership hangover stuff. I don't buy it just yet. The Giants are a serious team, for one, as I said, so you can't take too much away from that. And I know people like to laugh at the expected scores, you know, but it's a great indication of how a game goes. So they lost by 32, as we know, and look, you think, they were smashed. Not really. They should have won that by 15. So that 47-point differential, Chris, you gave me this. The sixth biggest ever.
So just a refresher on expected scores for those that might be tuning in for the first time this year.
Yep, so it takes a look at every shot you've taken, whether you scored or so every shot you have, including goals, behind or misses, and what's the expected accuracy from that. So if you're having a shot from the top of the goal square, it might be a 95% accuracy on that. You score it and you end up with, 0%, and you miss that and you're at negative 95% straight away. And again, we also use point value, so it might be worth... Usually you get 5.2 points from that, but if you kick it out in the four, you've just lost yourself 5 points. So, sort of accumulate all the shots and have a look at whether you've, outscored the competition average or missed too many scores.
So if you're on a tight angle, say 30 out, and you kick it through and the expected score from that is only 2.2 points because you might score behind most of the time, but you might get a goal every 10 times you hit it. You get 6 points, so you're plus 3 points.
Yep, so we can look at your expected score would be at that stage, you'd expect it to be 2.8, but your real score is 6, so you're plus 3 points. Yeah,
the best way to look at it is you're kicking for 50 on the boundary. You're not really expected to kick it.
Yeah.
And they were kicking those goals. They were kicking the ones you probably didn't expect. So they scored 29% better than expected, and the Pies scored 7% worse than expected. So that large discrepancy is an out-of-the-box game. That doesn't happen all the time. You play this exact game again with that exact... You might find they still win by 5 points and this Collingwood Premiership hangover talk isn't... We don't have that. Or you find that Collingwood win the game. So, yes, you would have loved to... All Collingwood fans would have loved to see them back up the Premiership with a win in opening round, but I would not be getting carried away with this loss.
The only thing I will say in response to that is you look at the fixture for round one and it's Sydney coming to the MCG.
Tough. Yep.
Incredibly impressive against the Demons. I know that the game was a scrap for a lot of it. And maybe this is one of the unspoken things about opening round and starting it in the northern states is some of the humidity that gets on the footy.
That was a very scrappy
start to the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably open it somewhere else.
I didn't think the other games were anywhere near as bad.
No. No, it was just that Thursday night, which was a bit grim. Yeah. But they do welcome the Swans, who were very impressive.
Mm.
And you talk about dynamic. I think that midfield group missing some of its key pieces.
Yeah.
Luke Parker's out for a while. Callum Mills obviously out as well. Add Brodie Grundy. Taylor Adams comes back in. Suddenly, their midfield's very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Their forward line's where the question is, and maybe a little bit on defence, but they were far too strong for another top four team last year in Melbourne. So I don't know if I'm a Collingwood fan, I'm a little bit worried.
There's every reason to be worried. They're another team that'll be fighting for a top six spot, I would have thought, the Swans. They've got better than what they were last year. We forget that they're 18 months removed from playing in grand final.
Correct.
And they've got better from that point, I would argue. I know they lost Buddy, but we're talking about Buddy at the end of his career, the players they've brought in. Look at Brodie Grundy. I've been very sceptical of Brodie Grundy over the years, but he was phenomenal in his first game. So... Yeah, I think they could easily be 0-2. But I still am not going to be sounding the alarm if they're 0-2.
Anything from the Swans D's game on Thursday? I know we could talk about Melbourne and the same old problems that
they've got. Well, it is the same old problems. And I'm sure you've looked at this. And I don't know. I don't know if you have anything on this, but they seem to take hard shots.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was just sort of going back to one of the things I was going to talk about with the Giants. And then, again, it goes into this game as well. So, we're just looking at how many inside 50s you had for the night and how many points you scored. So, the expected scores helps when you're scoring really well. But the Giants were the only team. They were 2.15 points per inside 50 on the weekend, which is 114 points from 53 inside 50s. The next best was Carlton at 1.8 points. So, GWS is the only one scoring 2 points per injury. But you look at down the bottom of this table, and it's Sydney with second last, with 1.3 points for every entry, and it was probably lucky that they were playing against Melbourne, who were 1.25 points for every entry. So they were the two worst.
I think the quality of what we were.
And then that's probably one of the main parts is they just neither team could really get clean scores on the board, and there was probably a 10-minute period for Sydney where they kicked those four or five goals at the start of the fourth quarter, which sort of helped the score tick over eventually, but. Yeah, having a look at the expected scores and where you took your shots. So Melbourne only took the 5 marks inside 50 for the night. 28% of their overall shots, so not just their scores, but also the shots that they missed, were from set shots. I think the comp average for the round was 60%, and the next lowest was 40%.
Is that right?
So 28% of their shots, they actually got to stop, have a good look at goal, and have it. And
so, that does kind of go to the point of they take hard shots because they're rushed.
Under pressure.
They're under pressure.
Correct. And so,
general, you're thinking,
And again, looking at expected scores, we can look at your expected accuracy from all your shots. So, comparing, as I said, someone like Carlton who had 50% accuracy from their shots. Brisbane had 53% expected accuracy from their shots. So taking pretty good shots on the night. Melbourne were 41% and the lowest for the round. And again, it's quite often a common theme when you look through Melbourne at the end of the round. They're all usually in the bottom four for quality of shots taken. Mm. So you think Petrarca running and having that long bomb from 55, those types of shots, they look good when they work, but Melbourne seem to take a lot more.
A lot of those, yeah.
Why is it still happening? This is what I want to know. Is it because they don't have a genuine key position target and they feel like that they're better off having a shot
I think it's also, you think about Melbourne's DNA theory, whatever it is, it's contest and defense. They don't have that outside polish, and they've something that they've always looked for. And that was the one thing that stood out to me in the preseason game. The outside polish was there against Carlton. They were hitting targets left, right, and center. I think I walked away from that going, well, Carlton's pressure was really low. They just didn't look good, and Melbourne were just hitting targets. Can these same players, Jack Vitie, Christian Salem, Bowie, those guys who were hitting the targets in the preseason, were they going to do that on across the season and starting Thursday night? They were just off again. So their kicking efficiency dropped from 66% in the preseason to 51%.
Conditions really didn't help, I don't think. But
there aren't many really, really good teams over a 4-5 year period, and we probably think longer, that haven't had a really dominant key forward at some stage. And I think to what your point, I think that is the problem. Not because, you can just bang it in there and they're going to take a contested mark and bail you out. But it's the fact that that kind of player commands the respect and the attention of the defense. And then it frees up your other players. It allows other players to take those uncontested marks 40 out from goal. Everything is just too hard when they're going inside 50. And I find that they do end up taking these difficult shots.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Van Rooyen's young, and he'll become more of that presence. But someone like Josh Shackey, I'm looking at him. He doesn't look like a 6-7 year player. He looks like a second year player the way he's built.
Yeah.
And probably just doesn't command that that respect from his defender or the respect from teammates to look for him more often. And kind of at our point, it's probably they look around and they go, well, I'm within 50. Maybe I'll have a go.
Well, is Ben Brown the player that can do that?
So Ben Brown to me is valuable in terms of just his forward craft, his leading patterns. He knows how to, again, you talk about having a good key forward. They can move defences and they make defences worry about them and sort of, you can take a step back and allow someone else to run in the space. So to me, I'm very surprised that they haven't gone back to him as quick as they have because he is your natural forward. He's kicked 60 goals in a season. Nothing else is working down there. So, get him in there.
Get him in. yes, fair enough. What about the Swans? I know that it's easy to get down in the dumps about teams that perform poorly, but the Swans were really good. And one of their marquee signings for the season, Brody Grundy, was arguably one of the best on ground.
Yeah, he was very good. But totally outplayed Max Gawn. And I think that would have surprised a lot of people.
I don't know. I think it surprised me how little influence Max Gorn had.
Yeah.
But I was I'm glad that Grundy had this game because everyone had forgotten he was close to
he's
the best
a solo
player.
Rock.
And he was almost the top five player when he was playing at his best in 2018, 2019. So just
that's the thing, that's a long time ago. So
it is, but he hasn't had injuries. But there was no reason why he wouldn't get back to that. He's a ruckman, and you know I'm a short guy, so I shouldn't say. It seems like a pretty not an easy position to play, but it's a very
you know what
you're going to do every week. You know where you're starting. Yeah. You're starting the centre bounce, and your job is to obviously a very difficult and physical position. But for Grundy, it's not like he was learning how to play next to another full forward. Or if you're playing in defence, you need to learn how to. It's like, I'm the ruckman. I know how to do my job.
And he should be better now. Like, the age profile of where he is, he should be better now than what he was when he was back-to-back, I think, All-Australian.
Yeah.
So just for the round, I mean, 13 hit-outs to advantage, that was the most of anyone. 7 score launches was the most of the round. And again, 2nd for hit-outs, 3rd of all players for hardball gets, 4th for all players clearances, 4th for equal 4th for contested possessions, and equal 9th intercept mark. So again,
it's a complete
typical Brody Grundy.
He was very good. I thought the other Sydney player that had a bit of an up and down last year was Isaac Heaney. He was fantastic in this game, playing a bit more in the midfield with the injuries you alluded to before.
Yep.
And just winning a lot of clearance, winning the contested ball, and taking the meters on offer straight away. I thought he was really, really important. And a contrast to the way in which Melbourne were playing through their midfield as well. So just going direct.
Well, those greasy conditions, that's the thing to do, right? I mean, he was wasn't he the number one player for the round for metres gained per kick as well?
Yeah, of all midfielders. So again, I think the only two players above him for metres gained per kick were Dane Rampey and Joe Danaher as the other one. So forwards and defenders who were getting long shots at goal.
Should he be playing them?
I was going to ask you this because this is a bread and butter question for you.
This is, and again, I don't think we spoke about it on the pod, but one of the stats I was across last week is he had kicked the most goals and was the number one ranked player. So using champion data ranking points, he was the number one ranked player and the number one goal kicker across round ones or opening rounds across the last 5 years.
Yep.
So he started the last 4 years, he started on fire and he did it. And I was just sort of laughing to myself. I'm like, well, I agree. He should be playing more midfield, but it's also convenient that he does this in round one where he does it every year.
He kicks 4 goals one day and you go, gee, they should play him forward.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a...
So he's always been a great start being a really good starter to a season. But you're right, he had more centre bounces than he usually had and career-high clearances. And the one thing that stood out to me is what we were sort of about to say is he was second for contested possessions for the round but had 38 metres gained per kick.
Yep,
so you think about the guys that are in and under, they're usually a lot of dumpy hands. Even someone like Matt Rowell, he might gain you a few metres because he's a bit of, go forward, but a lot of them is just handballing from out of packs and things like that. Isaac Heaney and Nick Dacos are the two players that just stood out in terms of Heaney, 38 metres gained per kick, and Nick Dacos, number one contested possession winner with 34 metres gained per kick.
Yeah.
So far, so much
you kick 38
higher,
metres?
So.
Can I kick 38 metres? Come on.
On your left?
Oh, blindfolded. I don't know if that makes any difference.
In all fairness to Isaac Heaney, that position, not in the midfield, but where he's playing half forward, high half forward, I think that's the toughest position to play to find consistency in.
Okay.
Because you're reliant on so much, and it can vary so much from one week to the next in terms of, you can have 16 disposals and kick 3 goals and look like one of the best players on the ground. The next week, you can have 14 and not kick a goal.
Well, I think that's Shea Bolton style.
And it's like you had no impact. It's like the games are not that dissimilar. But I'm a big believer in getting your best players. I've said this for years on this podcast, get your best players and best ball users around the ball more. And he certainly is that. And even when Parker and Mills Adams come back into the side, I think it would be crazy for him to not spend more time in there. I'm not saying he has to be in there at every centre bounce, but I think he should be rolling up there more. And we saw it with Tom Papley as well a lot last year. Just rolling him up for centre bounces. Get him in there because he can win the clearance. He's got that leg speed out of the stoppage. So I like the fact that you're throwing different players in there and players that have that X factor and they're dynamic in the middle of the ground.
I agree with Jake. Let him know, or let us know at Footy Tips on Twitter. Of course, Red Time has moved to its own show now, Thursdays.
It's good fun.
Looking forward to it, actually. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought it was really nice.
That's what you said earlier.
Red Time, it went a little long. Red Time normally goes for a bit shorter.
Well, we got to pat it out a little bit.
No, it's very good. So make sure you do tune in. It is a fantastic little addition to our podcast suite. And obviously, if you want any feedback, you can let us know at Footy Tips or rate and review the show wherever you get your podcast as well. We certainly do appreciate that. But what is staying around on this episode or these Tuesday episodes is the hype justified or is it hyperbole?
Our favourite
segment. One of the longest running segments I think we've had on the pod. And I'm going to kick this off. I'm going to have a go at you, actually.
Me?
If you kick your first goal in footy, you're allowed to celebrate, regardless of the margin.
No, you're not.
Seth Campbell, not a fan of what happened there?
I think...
Down 70-7, I think it was at the time.
Was it 70-7? No, it wasn't that. Was that the score at one point?
It was 72-6 at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they were... I think
it was... No, you can't be celebrating.
Come on now.
I'm sorry.
You said this in our group chat.
I'm not usually a Grinch in that, but I thought the same thing. I'm like, now's not the time.
Okay, I'll give you a fist pump or something like that, and they're all going to get around
they
you.
They mobbed him. He wasn't going out there.
He looked pretty excited.
He was up and about. And he got excited. Might have got a little carried away, but he acted like he'd won the game after the siren.
No. The kid's just kicked his first goal in footy.
I don't care. You can't be carrying on like that.
Both of you. I'm surprised with you, actually.
It's not the NFL.
Incredible Grinch.
I don't feel easy about it, but yeah, I'm in Jake's.
Speaking of the NFL, this was almost going to be my something I noticed, but I decided to go in a different direction. But there were a few cheeky clips from footy players this week in the media.
Clips as in, like,
Brent Daniels had a go at Cox.
I did see that. I like it.
And who was the other one? Charlie Kerno in the post-match on Channel 7 sort of said, oh, that might shut the media up about Harry Mackay kicking strike.
Yeah.
I thought there's just a little bit of NFL
good.
For you.
It's good. No, I don't like that. That's one thing.
But don't celebrate when you're down.
No. But I do like the... I do like that personality stuff. And this is kind of, you know, everyone's giving Mason Cox a bit of crap for some of his comments and all that, but we can't
He's great.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, we desperately want these characters in footy, but then the minute they do something...
And you know what? He had a bad game, but he'll take his medicine.
Yeah.
He's good for this.
He's going to be the first to say that he sucked on the weekend and he'll come back next week. I mean, that's the nature of it, but he's not going to back down and you've got to respect him for that.
Absolutely. Hey, one more before we wrap things up. George Hewitt should have been suspended for his high hit on Lachie Neale.
I'm happy to answer that one too. 1,000% he should have been.
Yeah, agreed.
Disgraceful to not get a suspension. Really disappointing from the AFL to not suspend him.
And this a few years ago, I think 4 or 5 years ago, and it was pre-season, it was Shane Mumford.
Yeah.
Similar action. First time we get to look at it all year, just rub him out.
Opening round, send a message.
Set that precedent. Yeah.
So what about Lachie Neale then? The tummy tap? Tummy taps. Yeah. Not
Tom
20.
Hawkins, I reckon.
But there's something about hitting someone in the head. I'm bigger on the Hewitt one a week. I'm happy for some of those tummy taps to get a fine.
So Hewitt was graded as careless, not intentional.
But Neale was intentional.
Intentional and not careless, but they both got the same fine.
I kind of understand that, but I just think if you're whacking someone in the head, you got to get suspended. This is the whole point.
It's a weird way to put it. You can tackle someone around the tummy, so that's not a no-go area. You can't touch people in the head.
No, it's nuts. And the thing is, it's just the AFL. We've just come off the Angus Brayshaw sad retirement for ongoing concussions, and everyone's getting stuck in a Braden Maynard, and everyone's saying it's a tragedy and that Brayshaw had to retire in the prime of his career. And this is because we all know that the AFL's not doing enough to protect the player. And this is the same thing. If Hewitt had punched Neale and Neale was concussed from the punch, which can happen. Like, it's so dependent on the situation. It's not like if he punched Angus Brayshaw, is he more likely to be concussed?
Yes. Well, is he more likely to be suspended? This is another question. It's like,
well,
how much of this has been?
Probably not, but he's more likely
to... Get AI to look at these instead.
So you can't tell me that if Neale gets knocked out and hits the ground, you can't tell me George Hewitt isn't getting 8 weeks for that. It's nuts. It can't be. We cannot just be so focused on
the outcome
and ignore the action. It is the action we need to get rid of.
I feel like we say this every week on this podcast.
It's maddening, but I don't understand why it takes... There's no change. It's every year we go through this same garbage.
No offense to the MRO, but has been out of the game a long time. It's probably time for a refresh on that.
Yeah, and you know, full disclosure, you know, Lachie Neale and George Hewitt, two of my favourite players. I like them both. They shouldn't. Neither of them should be playing this week.
There you go. Strong way to finish the. I was going to say the first pot of the year, but we've had a few.
Well, I wasn't on last week, so
that's true. Actually, how was Japan? By the
Japan way, Japan was great. Hard to come back. I must admit, I got on the plane in Tokyo, about to come back, and a few little tears in the eye. It's such a beautiful place. If you haven't been in Japan,
I always hear that.
Derailed extremely quickly. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Of course, the guys will be back on Thursday for Red Time. Make sure you tune in for that. Otherwise, we will speak to you in the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.